Sponsorship of the KQED live audio stream comes from Stanford Continuing Studies. This winter, join Stanford historians James Sheehan and David Kennedy for the Cold War and its legacies, exploring the global impact of this pivotal era. Learn more at continuingstudies.stanford.edu.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Giftflation is here. Prices for go-to gifts such as boxes of chocolates or the latest iPhone will be higher this year than last thanks to tariffs and inflation. And while consumers are anxious about the economy, they/we are still finding ways to break spending records. We'll talk about your gift plans and hear tips about craft fairs, meaningful items from local businesses, and going the no-buy route. It's all coming up next, right after this news.
Live from NPR News in New York City, I'm Dwahali Saikautel. The Supreme Court says it will take up the Trump administration's effort to restrict birthright citizenship. NPR's Martin Costi reports the High Court could upend a centuries-old tradition of automatic citizenship for people born on U.S. soil.
On his first day back in office, President Trump signed an order withholding citizenship from babies born to non-U.S. citizens in the country illegally or on a temporary visa. The White House says such situations should not be covered by the 14th Amendment, which grants citizenship to people born in the country. Ohio State law professor Cesar Huatemoc Garcia Hernandez says it's a momentous case.
One that has ramifications that are hard to fathom, to rewrite the way in which citizenship has been conceived of for several generations.
So far, lower courts have disagreed with Trump's stance and blocked implementation of his order. Martin Costi, NPR News.
The man accused of planting two pipe bombs near the U.S. Capitol the night before a mob of Trump supporters stormed the building almost 5 years ago was in federal court today in Washington, D.C. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports on Brian Cole Jr.'s first court appearance after a nearly five-year FBI investigation.
At his initial court appearance, Brian Cole Jr. was dressed in a beige jumpsuit and glasses. He stared at the table in front of him as the magistrate judge read the charges, and Cole answered yes when asked if he understood. Prosecutors said Cole spoke with law enforcement for more than 4 hours Thursday following his arrest. They did not provide details in court on what he said, but a person familiar with the matter told NPR that Cole told investigators he believed conspiracy theories that the 2020 election was stolen. Cole is due back in court later this month for a detention hearing. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
The Federal Aviation Administration says it has chosen a lead manager for its push to overhaul the U.S. air traffic control system. NPR's Joel Rose reports Congress has approved more than $12 billion for the project.
The FAA says it has picked Peraton, a national security company with headquarters in Northern Virginia, as the project manager for its multi-billion dollar effort to overhaul the nation's aging air traffic control system. Congress approved $12.5 billion in July to upgrade the equipment that air traffic controllers use after decades of complaints about technology failures and crumbling facilities. Peraton will act as the single integrator to manage the massive project, according to the FAA, which chose the firm over a joint bid by Parsons and IBM. Aviation industry leaders say $12.5 billion is just a down payment and that it will likely take an additional $20 billion to complete the work. Joel Rose, NPR News, Washington.
The architect of Bilbao's Guggenheim Museum, Frank Gehry, has died. This is NPR News. While high-level meetings continue between U.S. and Ukrainian officials aimed at ending the nearly 4 years-long war started by Russia, more missiles hit the capital, Kyiv, in the early hours of Saturday, injuring at least 3 people. Meanwhile, on the social media platform X, both U.S. and Ukrainian peace negotiators said, quote, "The real progress toward any agreement depends on Russia's readiness to show serious commitment to long-term peace." The Trump administration has selected a new architect for President Trump's White House ballroom. This comes just a few months after a different architect was announced with much fanfare, as NPR's Tamara Keith reports.
Since the president's ballroom project was announced in late July, his ambitions have grown to a $300 million budget and a much larger seating capacity. White House spokesman Davis Ingle described the shift to a new architect as necessary as the project transitions into the next stage of development. Quote, the administration is excited to share that the highly talented Shalom Baranis has joined the team of experts to carry out President Trump's vision. Trump has taken a very active role in the ballroom. Baranis has long worked in the nation's capital, including on high-profile projects like rebuilding the Pentagon after 9/11. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
The U.S. stock market rose to the edge of its all-time high. You are listening to NPR News from New York City. I'm Dua Lisa-Kowtow.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kauffman Foundation, providing access to opportunities that help people achieve financial stability, upward mobility, and economic prosperity regardless of race, gender, or geography. Kauffman.org.
Have you signed up for our kid-friendly newsletter? It comes once a month, and it's filled with activities that are, you guessed it, kid-friendly. This month's newsletter is all about holiday adventures. Sign up at kqed.org. Clouds will increase tonight in Northern California. Lows will be in the 40s with fog in the interior valleys. Saturday afternoon will be sunny after dense fog in the morning. Highs tomorrow will be in the 60s for the Bay region.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. You know, this year, I can't tell if I've changed or the world has changed, but holiday shopping feels more fraught than ever before. There are both an unending and incredible array of online retailers honing in on whatever your particular weaknesses might be, and also a huge number of local craft fairs, holiday markets, and other maker stuff. How you choose to spend your money, where you choose to spend your money, feels ever more complicated. Maybe it's the dominance of just a few big retailers like Amazon, or maybe it's just that for almost everyone, there is less money to spread around than in the past, as inflation has eaten whatever meager wage gains people have gotten, and tariffs hit a broad array of categories. Y'all, I'm trying to get in the holiday spirit here, I swear, but this is what I'm seeing out there. So we've got some guests who can do both, I think. They can think about the broad economic situation and also help us sort out our own particular little lives. We're starting first with Amanda Moll, senior reporter covering consumer culture at Bloomberg Businessweek. She writes the magazine's Buying Power column. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, talk to me about just the big picture here. Like, are people still spending money? Are gifts more expensive? It seems like everything's more expensive, so gifts must be. Talk to me.
Yeah, you know, I think that everybody who watches the consumer space and watches the economy overall was very curious to see what was going to happen going into this first weekend of the holiday shopping season that we just concluded. And I think that what we saw in consumer spending really outperformed what a lot of people expected. You know, the consumer economy has been like a little shakier than it has been in recent years. And I think because prices are going up. We have about 3% inflation year on year in the overall consumer price index. And in some categories, it's a lot more than that, including electronics, chocolate, you know, certain types of goods that have been impacted more than others. And some of those tend to be very gifty things. So we were all a little bit nervous going into this, I think, but consumers really outperformed expectations over the 5-day kickoff to the holiday shopping season. You know, there were high single percentage gains over last year, especially online. People were really, really shopping. So I think that people who watch the consumer economy are sort of pleasantly surprised at how the consumer seems to be doing right now.
Yeah, this is interesting because I feel like we've done a series of shows on consumer spending where it seemed like one clear signal was that people were going into different kinds of debt now. Like it wasn't just credit cards, it was buy now, pay later, it was all these other kinds of things. Do we have any signs about like whether this spending is just people being willing to dip into these different debt buckets or... Well, I don't know. Is that it?
Well, I think some of it is it. When you talk about something like consumer spending in a market as big as the United States, you see sort of like the top line numbers, but what is going on underneath that with different, depending on how you slice up the population of the United States by what metrics you're looking at, there's always sort of like conflicting, confounding, interesting phenomena. I think what we see right now, there's definitely some debt pressure happening with consumer debt in the U.S. You see, higher rates of default on credit cards, buy now, pay later. Yes, auto loans, buy now, pay later. There's been some evidence coming out that they are also seeing a lot of delinquent loans. So you definitely see a consumer base that like a big chunk of it is like super, super pressured in their sort of discretionary purchases. You see there's like some blinking red lights happening for certain proportions of the population. But then when you look at the sort of like big spenders of the economy, the top 10% of U.S. households by earnings, which is people, households earning $250,000 or more, they make up about half of the consumer spending overall in the United States. And they are doing, I think, better than most people right now. Like the richest people are always doing better than other people generally, but they're, the amount with which they are doing better has continued to grow over the years. Like in the 1990s, that percentage of Americans only did about a third of consumer spending. And they're doing great right now because they derive a lot of their wealth from asset prices. So as long as housing prices stay high, the stock market keeps going up, and other types of markets keep performing, those people feel particularly flush, I think. So they are doing okay and they are spending.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like this is the holiday shopping variant of the K-shaped recovery story. If people remember this from back in COVID, there's this idea that, you know, the top people in earnings and wealth would you'd see their line going up like the top line of the K, and everybody else would be sort of slowly declining. And now, like Dollar Tree is setting, records right in their earnings, and also the top of the spectrum is also doing well. It's like applied K-shaped recovery here.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is that you see, the high end of the market doing well, and you see, outlets like dollar stores and Walmart and TJ Maxx and its other brands, Marshalls, etc., doing like quite well in the economy. And there's some evidence that the people who are driving that expansion are at both ends of the spectrum are sort of the same people in a lot of cases, because you have people who are still pretty flush, still have a lot of resources at hand, but they're a little bit nervous too. So when you look at like, everyday purchases like paper towels, groceries, things like that, you see people who normally wouldn't shop maybe at Walmart, shopping at Walmart because, if the economy goes south, you want to have as much savings on hand as you can, but you still want to buy fun stuff while you feel like you can buy fun stuff. So you start switching down and looking for deals elsewhere.
Let's bring in a couple other voices here. First, we want to bring your voice out there, listeners, into the conversation. I mean, how are you feeling about holiday shopping this year? Are you cutting back? Are you deciding you're going to make all your gifts at home? Are you going to local craft fairs? Like, we'd really love to hear kind of your approach and your strategies here. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. The email is forum@kqed.org. Of course, social media, Blue Sky, Instagram, etc. KQED Forum, and there's the Discord as well. We want to hear about your holiday shopping ideas. We are joined this morning by Amanda Mull, senior reporter covering consumer culture with Bloomberg Business Week, and we're going to add in Taylor Hagen Collier, who's founder of Sip Shop Eat. That's a company that organizes some of these vendor fairs in the Bay Area. Welcome, Taylor.
Thank you.
And we have Sarah Jane Bernheisel, who's an illustrator and co-founder of Bay Made. That's a boutique in Oakland that sells stuff made only here in the Bay Area. Welcome, Sarah Jane.
Hi, thank you.
So let's get this sort of small business perspective here. You know, Amanda was talking about retailers, larger ones that seem to be doing fairly well. I've seen just from small business owners I know in the East Bay, they're feeling a little bit shakier than that.
Yeah, it's a weird time. I mean, even comparing it to last year, I'm noticing that sometimes things are the same and some are very different. This year, I'm noticing people are showing up. I think last year it kind of seemed that they were, at least for me, clinging on to their pennies until the very last second. And then they were like, okay, now I need to come out. So we did like most of our business in like honestly the week right before Christmas. And I mean, that's kind of true for us in the 8 years that we have been open. There's a lot of procrastinators and we love them. and so we try to make sure that we have something for all of those people. But I really think that just like even the week before Thanksgiving, people started showing up a little bit more. And as well, I mean, we've been noticing that our prices have had to go up a little bit as well, even though we are hyper local and everything is made in the Bay Area or designed by somebody in the Bay Area currently at our store. You know, it's still the things like the candle jars, like people aren't manufacturing those in Oakland.
Right.
The spray bottles, the things like that, like those things are all going up. And not to mention, of course, I mean, actually you already did mention chocolate and coffee, things like that. So we have locally made chocolate bars from Dandelion Chocolate in San Francisco. Their prices have gone up a little bit. We get our coffee from Bicycle Coffee in Oakland. Their prices have gone up for 12 ounces of coffee. But also to talk about what you were saying earlier, what the other speaker was saying earlier is that people who are in our neighborhood tend to be a little bit more affluent, and they're just buying the gifts regardless because they need something. And I'm very grateful for those people, but we are very much sustained by the people who live directly around our store. So it's pretty interesting. And then, you know, we're also sustained a little bit by corporate gifting too. So between those two things, I mean, we're doing pretty well, but I know also a lot of other small business owners that are really struggling right now.
Yeah. Taylor, how about you all? I mean, you have an interesting view into this ecosystem because you have vendors who come to you and then need to sort of survive through this, these markets and fairs, yeah?
Yeah, sure. So we organize in many markets across the U.S., but look, this past year, we've focused very much on the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. We actually have an event this weekend in Sunnyvale on December 6th, and we feature up to 100 brands at each of these events, and there's definitely a craving for vendors to be placed there. Even when we've had to, you know, turn our applications off and turn vendors away, we always have vendors asking to participate because it's a great source of revenue for vendors. We also have had vendors that have been with us over the course of the 8 years that we've been in business who have completely gone offline. They don't even sell online anymore, and they only activate in person pop-up shops and craft fairs.
Why do you think that is?
They make more money. The overhead of shipping and receiving, it's much cheaper for them to just activate in person and get those connections. I mean, there's definitely brands that will ship to their repeat customers, so especially those that have consumable products. Whether it's skincare or body care, they will refulfill those orders for the customers that they meet in person, but they just have the opportunity to get in front of an engaged audience. Whereas online, you're going to get a lot of traffic from people who may or may not be interested. Then when they add to cart, there's, the cost of shipping, that turns people away, and there's a lot of abandoned carts. Whereas in person, you're getting a very engaged shopper who has come out to this event for the sole purpose of purchasing
buying
from small
stuff.
Businesses.
Right. We're talking about managing higher prices for gifts this holiday shopping season, where you shop. We're joined by Taylor Hagen Collier, who's founder of Sip Shop Eat, a company that organizes some of these vendor fairs in the Bay Area. We're also joined by Amanda Mole, senior reporter covering consumer culture at Bloomberg Businessweek, and Sarah Jane Bernheisel, who's the co-founder of Bay Made. That's a boutique in Oakland, sells stuff made around here. We, of course, want to hear from you, your recommendations for local gift ideas, vendor fairs or stores, and how you're sort of approaching holiday shopping. 866-733-6786, forum at kqed.org. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned.
I'm Nina Kim. On Forum's 9 p.m. rebroadcast, when Patricia Lockwood got COVID in March of 2020, she experienced feeling insane for months, calling her symptoms Brian fog instead of brain fog, and hearing a single song lyric over and over in her mind. Lockwood joins us to share how she grappled with losing her sense of self and what she learned can anchor us in deeply disorienting times. It's called Will There Ever Be Another You? Join us tonight at 9 on KQED.
Support for KQED comes from the University of San Francisco's MFA, offering the Bay Area's oldest writing program with one-on-one thesis mentoring and access to literary community. Applications are open, usfca.mfa.edu. And from Heath Ceramics, Heath's Make Good Market returns to San Francisco this weekend. Visitors can explore dozens of craft vendors along with food trucks from off the grid. Heath Ceramics, handcrafted in the Bay Area since 1948.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about holiday gifts and what's going on with holiday shopping, given the kind of strange economy we find ourselves in. Let's bring in Usman in Elk Grove. Welcome.
Hi, good morning, Alexis.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I was just listening to your forum and wanted to comment on your previous point that the economy, the shopping has gone really way high. People are shopping. I think I wanted to say that people are frustrated because people are like us. We've been canceling our trips or holding on to it because everything's been really, really expensive. And I think people are just getting more shopping because they can't really go out and do their shopping or dine out. So I think that's why we're seeing that spike in that shopping. That's people have to spend money somewhere.
Yeah. Usman, thank you so much. Appreciate that. I mean, Amanda Mull, this is kind of an interesting one, right? This idea that there might be these kind of big ticket items or big trips that people might otherwise have taken, but they're kind of holding off there and putting their money in other places because they still want to feel like it's the holidays, even if they're not doing the big trip.
Yeah, I think that to a certain extent, you do see people trying to reorganize how they're spending and reallocate the resources that they have, even at the high end where people are making a lot of money and have a lot of resources. I think people are looking around and going, okay, like how do we, if we're nervous about the future and we want to, you know, hold on to as much money as we can, but we still like want to feel normal and we want to feel like we're doing the holidays like we normally would. Like, how do we go about doing that? Which is why I think you see some of that, people, you know, switching down on, you know, where they buy their toilet paper or their, you know, everyday stuff and then going out. And one of the interesting things that we've seen in the data from, the Black Friday period, the 5 days, of shopping that kicks off the season is that people are, you know, they're spending more money than they did last year, but they are buying fewer things. Huh. So you get people spending more money on fewer things, which suggests that they're looking at, you know, making larger purchases. Maybe, and this is just my theory, but I think that people are looking at inflation and going, okay, well, this is a period I know the discounts are going to be good. I had been sort of holding off buying this, you know, a new TV, a new piece of furniture. Let's do it right now. When, you know, this is probably going to be as good as the deal gets. So let's go ahead. And I think that having that moment to like prompt people to be like, okay, you're getting a good deal. It's okay to spend right now has been a useful like psychological trigger for a lot of people.
It's really interesting. I want to get to some of these craft fairs, which seem to have really exploded in popularity over the last few years. I mean, Taylor Hagen Collier, is that true, or is it just I'm seeing them more? I just aged into the demographic of people who know about where the craft fairs are. But it just feels like there's so many now. What's your experience been organizing these things?
Yeah, absolutely. There is definitely a lot more. Even for me, I started in 2017, and at the time, there were some of these really big craft fairs, like the Renegades and the West Coast Crafts, that were just extremely large scale. But it does seem like there are craft fairs every weekend by multiple different organizers, some of which you can't really find the source of the organizer. You're right. They're everywhere. And I think a part of that is just that the cost, at least for the business owners that participate in the markets, is low end and they can make a large profit from their low investment in most cases, especially from the more local markets that, you know, happen in Oakland and kind of like this outdoor setting. Of course, the higher end craft fairs like the Renegades and West Coast Crafts are a higher investment for the small business owners. But even those, they're attracting upwards of 20,000 shoppers per weekend. And so many of the brands are walking away with five figures in revenue. So it is a great opportunity for small brands to get their name out there and make money without the overhead of a storefront.
Yeah. Let's bring in some folks who are doing things like this. Kay in Niles, welcome.
Hi. Yeah, tomorrow from 10 to 4 at the Triton Museum of Art in Santa Clara, they're having a holiday art fair, and it's filled with vendors that make beautiful one-of-a-kind items, local. So shop local, support your museums and your libraries, because the felon took all the money away.
Thanks, Kay. Appreciate that holiday cheer. Let's go to Rebecca in Sausalito. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a clothing designer at Sausalito. And I'm in a building called the ICB. It's an old marine ship building in South Korea. And we have 100 artists in this building making art. And I'm a clothing designer, so I'm a rarity here. But we're having an open studio from 5 to 8 p.m. tonight, as there are high tides here in Sausalito, so we have to live with the tides. But it's a wonderful chance to get to see artists and get, whether it's a small piece of a painting, or is seeing, we have makers, a day where people can view artists at work and seeing the processes. So it's good to keep on the radar for craftspeople and artists in our area. And thank you.
Rebecca, is this a big time of the year for you in terms of sales, or is it more sort of steady for what you're doing?
Well, I do special clothing, and holiday shopping is a gifting season. So people usually make big personal purchases from a clothing designer for themselves. So it is a gift for themselves, but I'm not really a gifting unless somebody wants to give a gift for somebody, but they're, for people who want, you know, who are trying to find something specially made, I'm a great resource for that. For, you know, whether it's, you know, I'm doing men's clothing or women's clothing. For people who like special one of a kind pieces, I'm a place to come.
Got it. Okay, cool. Hey, thanks so much, Rebecca. That seems like a cool community of artists. I wanted to mention too, just on my own geography here, East Bay Open Studios also happening starting, it'll be this coming weekend, the 6th and 7th, and December 13th and 14th. And there are just so many artists in the East Bay opening up their studios for people. And of course, we can try to make some money from it. KQED also has an event going on. This one's kind of fun. It's KQED Denim Market. You can buy, sell, and customize. That's actually tomorrow at 3 o'clock at our headquarters on Mariposa Street, of course. So you can check that out. One of the things I'm really curious about, Amanda Moll, is, you know, around here, we have seen a real hit to our commercial retail. Like, there's just a lot of empty storefronts. There's a lot of empty commercial space. And then right alongside it, there's this rise of these craft fairs. It feels like maybe they're, like, providing the outlet for the same kind of energy that would have previously been in actual brick-and-mortar retail. But I don't know.
You know, I think that there is a real phenomenon of the you know, the retailers that are doing well at brick and mortar are differentiated in some way. And that means that they have like a value proposition that, that supersedes just ordering something on the internet. And the value proposition of that is generally convenience. So brick and mortar that offers, goods that are not widely available online, that offers like a particularly nice experience when you go in that, you know, retailers that sell things that are interesting to pick up and look at and that you want to experience before you buy them are doing particularly well at brick and mortar, like the beauty industry, fragrance, things like that. That is still like the bread and butter of those industries is brick and mortar. So I think that, you know, one way you can really differentiate right now when so much is available online is being a retailer that sources these like interesting local things and like and effectively communicates that to the community around you. And if you're in a place like the Bay Area where there's a lot of people who are intensely interested in supporting, you know, local businesses who are interested in the culture of the region, then I think that you have, you know, a combination of an audience and a business that really sort of can coexist in brick and mortar.
Yeah, Sergeant, I mean, be that retailer for us. Guide us through some things, some gift ideas. Maybe it's gift categories, maybe it's particular things that you feel like make sense for people to know about.
Yeah, so one of the things that I like to recommend, well, many things, are things people can use. I feel like art can just be so subjective. I mean, in our store, we kind of act as a permanent art market. That was one of the inspirations behind starting this market. My store was to have it act as a functional market that you could get to. You didn't have to know about the hours and when it was going to be. And, you know, when you're looking at a piece of pottery, you might be really inspired by that. Like, oh, I love that. But you don't know if the person that you're gifting needs more mugs. So unless you intimately know what that person likes and what they would like to put on their wall, we have a lot of these gift boxes that we put a lot of edible items into, as well as like skincare things, things people can use up. Like people will use lotion. People will use candles. They will use a jam. They will eat the cookies, that kind of thing. And if not, then they can find somebody else that they would like to give it to. But typically those types of gifting, I mean, like things like a granola and honey and jam kind of pairing are really popular. So we do all kinds of things like that. And it's because then there's also things that are like, oh, well, my person has a dietary restriction, but they love taking baths. And it's like, okay, great. Well, we have some really wonderful bath fizzies and bath soaks and things of that sort that people can also use up. So those tend to be our best sellers actually right now. And we have just some really yummy options. I'm very lucky in that I get to sample everything before it goes out onto our floor. And we have some really good items right now.
Cool. Let's go back to the phones here. Just a reminder, we're taking your calls about maybe you're organizing a craft market or a holiday market or an art fair, or you've got a recommendation for folks. You can give us a call, 866-733-6786, forum at kqed.org, and, of course, all the social media things as well. Let's go to Rachel in Mountain View. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm one of the co-chairs of the German Holiday Market in Mountain View, which is organized by the German International School of Silicon Valley. And we create an authentic Weihnachtsmarkt right in Mountain View. But one of the things we really try to do is curate our vendors very carefully. We try not to have a lot of repeating products. You won't find any wind chimes. We don't have visual arts. It's all very gifty.
What do you have against wind chimes? What do you have against wind chimes, Rachel?
I have two in my backyard. Don't get me wrong. Just saying.
Yeah.
We really want to be different, and we have two jewelry vendors, but we don't have more, and we do get lots of applications because we just really want people to have a lot of variety. It's not a huge market either, but you will find great variety, great really nice gifty things, and. You know, we try to also keep, we tell the vendors that things do well when they're in a certain price range for gifts. If you're selling $200 things, they're not going to go as well as like the, you know, 20 to 60, 80, well, maybe 100, I don't know.
Wait, so what goes into an authentic German holiday market?
Yeah, so in most cities in Germany, even really small villages, they'll set up a little holiday market that runs most of the month, actually. And it has local vendors come and sell their wares, and then there's warm drinks like Glühwein and Kinder Punch, which is warm apple cider, and it's really a community event where you come together and you know in those dark days, and enjoy. Now the bigger places like Munich will also have lots of rides, and they'll have a huge stage with lots of performances, and so we have a bit of that too. We have some rides, we have the stage with performances. People say it's run by the German school, and so it is. You will hear lots of German being spoken there, and people come and say, "Wow, this really does feel like Germany. This is amazing."
Wow, fun. Rachel, I love it. That's that seems like a great kind of experience beyond even the shopping. Let's go to Steve in San Francisco. Welcome, Steve. Hey, Steve, are you with us?
No, sorry. Yeah. So thanks very much for taking my call. I am Steve Sellers, and I'm the CEO of a nonprofit organization called SF Made. I know you have Bay Made on your show, which is great, kind of our cousins in the East Bay. We represent over 750 manufacturing companies, mostly small and medium-sized manufacturing companies, many, many of them started by women, people of color, recent immigrants. And in San Francisco, there's over 600 of them that we represent. And what these manufacturers do is bring true life and diversity and warmth and interest to our city, to our communities as a whole. They really are responsible for a lot of the texture and richness that we love about San Francisco and about the Bay Area as a whole. And I just wanted to give a shout out because we have a 3-week holiday store down in number 2 Embarcadero, right on the street level. You can just walk in. We have over 60 of our manufacturers' goods there, and they're wonderful things to buy for the holidays. So I just want to, if you're downtown, come on over, walk into our store. We're going to be there until the 20th, and we're open 11 to 4. And we have some really, really great stuff that, you know, makes for wonderful holiday gifts, all manufactured right in San Francisco.
That's cool. Hey, Steve, thanks so much for that. You know, Taylor, when you think about these craft markets, I mean, I've almost, like, a bunch of them are coming in. I've seen so many online. Like, how do you decide, aside from the ones that you produce yourself, how do you decide which ones might be, like, worth it and which might be a little sad-making?
You know, it is really hard to decide if you're just going off of line, especially if the market doesn't have much of an online presence, but I really go based off of, it's really a personal decision. You know, for me, I am more of a fashionista. I like to find one-of-a-kind products and items, and when you do find a well-organized market, there usually is a website where you can kind of browse and see what kind of makers and retailers will be participating in the market, and you can kind of gauge, well, this is the market for me. I know I'm going to find something that I'm looking for or something that's truly one of a kind. Without that, it is kind of hard to decide, but I have been to a lot of local markets, and usually I find some joy in it just because I truly like shopping and finding new businesses. And even if you're at a kind of something that's not necessarily related to a pop-up market, there's usually some component of vendor representation, even at like a festival even. And it's always nice to find these one-of-a-kind brands that you may have not heard about online mm-hmm. or on the news or on some sort of media outlet. And mm-hmm. the only way to find those is by going to these local community events. So
yeah, absolutely. We've got some comments coming in from people who are thinking about the kinds of gifts that they would like to give. You know, Jane writes, I'm aiming to buy gifts from local artists at craft fairs and such, as well as local small businesses. I'm still shaking my head as I see empty storefronts everywhere from COVID times, and I'm rooting for artisans and small businesses to stay intact. Bonnie writes, as two elder millennials that had too much fun eating avocado toast in our 20s and 30s, we let our boomer parents do the bulk of Christmas gifting to our children. Then we try to give handmade gifts to friends and family. Just because people are spending doesn't mean the economy is healthy. It means people are making bad choices under capitalism. We are talking about managing higher prices for gifts this holiday, how to find meaningful things in this capitalist world, through art fairs, craft fairs, holiday markets, etc. We're joined this morning by Taylor Hagen Collier, who's founder of Sip Shop Eat. That's a company that organizes vendor fairs here in the Bay Area. We've got Amanda Moll, senior reporter covering consumer culture with Bloomberg Business Week. She writes the Buying Power column, if you've read that. And we've got Sarah Jane Bernheisel, who's an illustrator and co-founder of Bay Made Boutique in Oakland. We're going to get to more of your calls and comments. Like, we're curious about your sort of experiential gifts or kind of the unusual suggestions you might have for what you could give someone if you really don't have the money to buy the thing you want to buy. So you can call us 866-733-6786. We'll keep taking your craft fairs and expose you to more holiday markets. You can also email us forum@kqed.org. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned. Coming up in the next hour, Forum with Mina Kim. When writer Patricia Lockwood fell ill with COVID in March of 2020, she experienced feeling insane for months, calling her symptoms Brian fog, not brain fog, and also the refrains, because a single song lyric would play over and over in her mind. So she decided to, quote, write a masterpiece about being confused. Her new novel is called Will There Ever Be Another You? And Lockwood joins us to share how she grappled with losing her sense of self and how she found humor and absurdity in illness. Hey, did you know you can subscribe to our show's podcast on Spotify? You should try it. Welcome back to Forum. Alexis Madrigal here. We're talking about holiday shopping. I'm trying to do the unusual, not the standard things. We're joined by Sarah Jane Bernheisel, co-founder of Bay May. That's a boutique in Oakland. Sells stuff made just here in the Bay. Taylor Hagen Collier, founder of Sip Shop Eat. That's a company that organizes vendor fairs in other places and also in the Bay. And Amanda Mull, senior reporter covering consumer culture for Bloomberg Businessweek. Let's get to Ibrahim. Welcome in Oakland.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me on. My name is Ibrahim, and I've been running a business for 14 years in the Bay Area called wow. Hella Positive.
Yeah.
And recently, this year, I closed my retail venue gallery, art gallery. And so I'm transitioning into like these holiday markets. So I just wanted to say that, one, I think that it's also a community response. To everything going on in the world and the economy. I think that people are realizing they don't have to get like a whole venue. They can maybe rent one out for a day, hit up a bunch of their entrepreneur friends, their craft friends, and kind of make something out of it. And then also I have a holiday market on Sunday, December 7th from 1 to 6 at 7th West in West Oakland. And then another one on December 13th at Rise and Grind Coffee from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Rise and Grind is over by Lake Merritt.
I mean, it's kind of interesting, man. As you're talking, it strikes me it's almost like DIY retail. It's like the zine to the magazine is kind of what some of these pop-up markets are to like a brick-and-mortar store.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm in Oakland. It's expensive if you want to have a nice building. And I had to do a lot of repairs on my art gallery and retail space. And, you know, it's just like a lot of work to run a venue when, you know, and plus like online shopping now is kind of, a good option for like, I do clothing, I do tie dye. And that way more people can see it, but you know, having a venue, there's that sense of visibility like all the time. And it was on 7th Street. So it was a good street to be on, but it still was really hard to get a retail shop going out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, really, really appreciate that. Let's go to another part of the Bay here. Let's go up to Vanessa in Sonoma. Welcome.
Hi, my name's Vanessa, and I'm the director up here in Sonoma of the Sonoma Community Center. And we have an art market opening today. It'll be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and we have over 70 artisans in the whole building, and there's food and festivities. It's going to be a great time.
That's awesome. That's, you know, one of the things that's funny is people describe, you know, these buildings that have all these different artists. It kind of creates a new geography for me, too. As I just, every time I see one of these buildings now, I'm like, oh, wait, that's where the artists are. They're all holed up inside.
It's an old school, this old, beautiful brick building about a block and a half from the plaza. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's just brimming with life and artists, and it's been really great because this is a curated show, so we've had artists from all over the area apply, and so it's very exciting to have all these people in one space, and it's really interesting to see the connections between the artisans too, right? They get to be in place with each other for a whole long weekend, mm-hmm. and just the sharing of ideas and the building of community, it's pretty incredible.
I love it. Thanks so much for that, Vanessa. Appreciate that. Let's talk, this might be a fun one for you, Sarah Jane. There is a listener, if I can see the name, Lillian, who writes, we'll be visiting family out of town in Vermont. Can your guests offer suggestions for gifts to bring, perhaps highlighting California as gifts for my host?
Yeah. So one of the things that we really like selling are home accessories that happen to be made by somebody local and has fun California or Oakland themed things. So a popular gift that we've been putting together has been a cute California poppy dish towel, along with like a local candle and some local chocolate, and having it be like, oh, here's a little memory of California that you can have and actually use that's functional. And then also here are some goodies to go along with. And so that's really popular. I mean, we've had people who seek us out specifically looking for those types of gifts because they are traveling to Korea for the holidays and they want to bring something that they wouldn't have mm-hmm. or anywhere in the world. And it's really, really fun. Or we have people who are visiting the Bay Area from wherever in the world and then want to bring it back to their home. And so they'll pick up like an Oakland magnet or whatever else mm-hmm. too. So we have all those types of things. And then they're also very excited to know that they are buying directly from somebody who is a local artist. And it's been really cool to listen and all these different people talking about community, because that is so much about what we are all about. Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, all of us, when we all work together, it makes us something really special. I think all of these different groups, whether it's here at Bay Made or if it's at any of these other community markets that people have been calling into, I think it's really special because it's kind of a small world on the vendor side of things. I mean, when I started my shop, it was the people who I had booths next to at craft fairs myself. And so when you have a chance to bring those really special things from those local artisans to wherever else in the world, they're going to find something that they wouldn't be able to find, either at a big box store or from their own local market. So it's just fun to have that exchange for sure.
That's cool. I also love we're somehow like just reinventing the old market that apparently German villages have been doing for hundreds of years. But now we've finally figured it out here in America.
Seriously, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Isabel in Oakland, welcome.
Hi, my name is Isabella. I'm a professional home organizer of 18 years, and the name of my business is Girl with a Truck. And over all these years, I've seen a lot of waste. I've seen a lot of gifts people received for holidays and birthdays that were never used, gone to waste.
Isabella, what's the number one gift you see just like sitting there as you do home organizing?
Oh my gosh, there are so many. There's dish towels, there's toys that they don't want for their kids, but they grandmother gets them a bunch of toys. And so what I would suggest to people is to focus on gift cards. You can get gift cards to all these places and let people choose what they want, because choosing what people want for them really doesn't work so well. So you can buy gift cards for restaurants, for small local shops, and then you bring the customer into that store and they could even buy more while they're there. And if for some reason they don't use the gift card, at least so much plastic isn't going to waste.
Yeah.
And the business still makes that money off the gift card.
You know, Isabel, I love that idea as an anti-waste strategy, but as a, hey, I got you a thoughtful gift and here it is and I did this, you know, it feels, I don't know, Amanda Moll, what do you think? I love it, and I also am worried it seems like a cop out, you know?
Well, it depends on who you're giving to. If you've got a real shopper in your life, then feel totally free to get them a gift card, give them cash, take them to a store and let them pick something out. For a lot of people, the part of the joy of the stuff that they have is like getting to make a selection and getting to choose something and having the perfect thing. So I think that like in those cases, this is, I think, a lot of people, a gift card is totally fine. For other people, I mean, there are some that out there who will feel insulted by a gift card. Mothers-in-law, I think, or as a category, might feel a little bit insulted by a gift card. Try to really think about the people in your life and whether or not trying to pick something for them is the right choice, because for some people it won't be. For some people, you'll give them a greater gift by letting them go to a store and pick out a little treat themselves. And for other people, you probably need to try your best.
Here's some other comments and ideas. One listener writes, Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace are amazing for kids items. I've found gifts for this year that are new or basically new for a fraction of the original price. We also like to go to thrift stores to put together a thrifted and handmade gift basket for family members. My kids are so into thrift these days. I feel like that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Steve on the Discord writes, our family has a longtime tradition of giving donations in the name of the gift recipient and writing a nice card. That's nice. Another listener writes, as a grandmother of five, I find myself doing more practical Christmas shopping instead of useless toys this year. I know my children are having a hard time with things like underwear, pajamas, and socks. Is it going to be... I used to like look askance at getting socks for Christmas. Now I'm like, please, more socks. I need socks. And here is, this one's lovely. This is such a nice idea. Acacia writes, wonderful name, a cozy beach bonfire and picnic packed, set up, and catered by me. Yes, please. That sounds awesome. Let's go to Posey in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. Before I give my suggestion, I just want to say that I am an artist. And I used to design and make jewelry. So, yes, supporting local artisans is incredible. And you'll buy things that people remember for their whole lives. Mm. I'm heartbroken. The KPFA Crafts Fair, which I looked forward to every year as a kid, my mom and I would go to. And there was one woman who did a crafts fair up north. And she's right. It's like a whole day. You know, there's music and food and wine. It's great. Okay, but my idea is, if you just, it kind of dovetails on the gift certificate, but maybe you could make it a little more special. And I also think that one of the things of gifts is maybe something you wouldn't buy for yourself, so a little bit of a luxury item. So I have a friend who loves this expensive Italian restaurant, so I can't get her gift certificate for the whole thing, but I'll break it up into maybe, I don't know, let's say, whatever you can afford, whether it's two or three or four, five, $10 gift certificates. And then you make like a Christmas tree and you hang it from each one and you make it like this really unique gift. And if it's a luxury item that they just wouldn't do for themselves, it could be really appreciated. So thank you so much. And even though the KPFA Crafts Fair isn't here, I'm so glad Forum is still here. So thank you.
Hey, thanks, Posey. We're glad you're still here, too. Thanks. Here's a nice one, and then we're going to get to a serious question. Mari writes, another way to support the arts is to choose a performance that you want to attend, then purchase the tickets for you and the person you want to attend with you. For many years, my Christmas present to my mom was Alvin Ailey tickets at Zellerbach, which actually, if someone wants to buy me a present, don't actually do this, but Alvin Ailey tickets at Zellerbach would be perfect. I'd love that. Another listener writes, and this one is coming to you, Taylor. I'm a teacher and ceramicist. I do holiday pop-ups, and I struggle so much with pricing that covers the costs of clay and doesn't undermine pricing of artists whose entire livelihood relies on their art while remaining in a price range that isn't out of reach for people on a tight budget. Is there such a thing as a middle-class art market, or is good art by default a luxury product nowadays?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say, not to overplug my business, but I do think that my Sip Shop Eat is a great, kind of example of that, because we do tend to attract an affluent shopper, but we also attract those who are, you know, younger, who maybe they can't spend, you know, $100 on every product that they see, but they're more thoughtful about what they purchase and more intentional. And so they're willing to pay the price, and they're not, it's not a market where you come to haggle. And I would say that's one of those, the differentiators. It is hard to find, and it's hard to know when you're applying to multiple markets for the holiday season, which one your product is going to fit well in. But I would say for that maker to truly do your research. And I mean, it takes time going to the website, kind of seeing the experience of other makers. And so many people share their experiences through social media these days that you can find the answer that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And a good market will give you those demographics about their shopper and how much they spend and the average amount spent per shopper so that you can make a better informed decision. And then just kind of going through that history of what kinds of brands have also participated in past markets to know whether or not your brand would be a good fit. Mm-hmm. And I would just say that you really want to find a market that has unique differentiated categories to participate in, because people that come to our events are looking for unique things. They're looking for that thing that you can't find on Amazon or you can't right. find in Walmart. So they are more willing to pay a higher price point. And of course, you're going to get those people that are like, oh, I could make that or, you know, $27
you're
for
like,
a
oh,
month.
Oh, yeah, buddy. Then go do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you will find that. But for the most part, I'd say the majority of our customers understand that these are handmade products and they're one of a kind and you're not going to find them in a Target.
Yeah. Love that. So hopefully that helps that ceramicist out there. Laura writes, we love holiday markets. I just returned from some charming Nordic ones in Iceland, and I'm gearing up for two awesome local markets at our kids' Oakland schools. Makers and Designers will be at the annual holiday craft fair at Edna Brewer Middle School, December 13th. December 14th, Young Student Crafters are going to be selling at Thornhill Elementary's annual holiday market, raising money for programs. Kind of amazing. Many of the Oakland schools do this. Peralta Elementary School has a makers market on December 14th, starting at 11. There's a few others just to run through here. The Holiday Bazaar. You can just listen for where you live and go to that one. Holiday Bazaar at Mercury Cafe in Hayes Valley. That's December 13th. San Francisco Waldorf School Winter Fair, December 7th. So that'd be on Sunday. Maker Nexus, if you're down in Sunnyvale. So hopefully that helps. Okay, let's go around the horn with just a fun question. Amanda, we're going to start for you. What is something you hope to be gifted during the holiday season?
You know, I'm like an impossible person to buy for.
A national championship for the Georgia Bulldogs. That's what I'm going to buy for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Go Dogs. But I, you know, my birthday is also Christmas Eve. So, like, it is a mess for me around Christmas because not only, you know, Christmas Eve birthday, I write about shopping for a living. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of my own. One thing I got that actually I opened last night was I asked my boyfriend, who's an English teacher, to pick out some books for me. You know, he spends so much of his time reading, and I was, when we wanted to get each other sort of like smaller affordable gifts this year because of some other expenses we have planned. And, he got me two like really fascinating, interesting books that I opened last night. And it was like, oh, this person knows me. It was the type of gift that was like a really lovely, heartfelt gift. So I was really excited to receive that.
Taylor, how about you? Are you like, please don't get me anything? I have an overflow of artisan gifts.
No, I love artisan gifts. So give me all of them. There's actually a vendor that's participating in this weekend's event that sells records, and I really want something from her collection.
Oh,
I love music, so.
That's a nice one. That's a really good one. Sarah Jane, how about you?
Oh man, my husband, he's driven crazy by the fact that I own a gift store. He's like, ugh. I already have everything. And,
I don't know, beach bonfire picnic. I think you got the answer there.
That's exactly the kind of thing that I love. I love events and I love concerts. I also too love books and records, things of that sort. I absolutely adore. And like, yeah, gift certificates to restaurants, things of that sort. I love. So I'm always happy. I generally always laugh that in some ways I'm a very easy gifter, but then people are like, well, I can't buy you just a freaking candle. You already have 20 million over at the shop. And it's very real. And I'm like, yeah, but even then I use stuff. So if people do get me a candle, I'm like, hell yeah, let's do it. So it definitely depends, but I do drive my husband absolutely mad with, he never knows what to get me. So bless him.
I love the idea that you actually light the candles. I feel like everyone buys candles and
you got to use it because otherwise you end up with a hoard of candles that you never burn, and that's sad. That's a candle graveyard.
Last things for folks, Sonoma Artist Cooperative Gallery, they've got a thing going on, the Crucible, if you know that metal working shop, they've got a thing, and Max's Garage Press, which is in Berkeley, has a print sale, which I bet is going to be awesome. We've been talking about managing high prices for gifts this holiday season. We've had Sarah Jane Bernheisel, Taylor Hagen-Collier, and Amanda Mole with us. Thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you also to all of our callers and listeners. The 9 o'clock hour forum is produced by Grace Wan, Blanca Torres, Jennifer Eng, and Francesca Fenzi. Our interns are Jesse Fisher and Joy Diamond. Marlena Jackson-Rotondo is our engagement producer. Judy Campbell is the lead producer. Danny Bringer, Brendan Willard, Chris Beal are our engineers. Katie Springer is the operations manager of KQED Podcast. Our editor-in-chief is Ethan Tovin Lindsay. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum
are provided by the Generosity Foundation and the members of KQED.
Writer Patricia Lockwood talks about her experience of contracting long COVID and her new novel, Will There Ever Be Another You? That's coming up in the next hour of Forum after your traffic update starting at the Bay Bridge. Here's Jill Salvatore.
Yeah, we have better news, Michelle, on the upper deck of the Bay Bridge, right past Fremont Street. That's where we had a car and a motorcycle involved in a crash blocking the two right lanes. That's been cleared, but traffic trying to recover. The metering lights are still on. It's a slow ride into San Francisco. The other problem we have is in Oakland, 580 eastbound connector to 980. It's a crash with a motorcycle there blocking the left lane. Joe Salvatore for KQED.
Support for KQED's car donation program comes from local Kia dealers. Donating a car to KQED is easy. We'll arrange to have it picked up, running or not in most cases, and invest the funds back into our news coverage. Learn more at KQED.com.